Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
It is Tony Katz today, but today it's not Tony Katz.
It's weird how that works out. It's a little bit of almost a palindrome. I am not Tony Katz. Tony Katz is off living the life in Vegas. I am Derek Hunter, filling in for Tony today, and we'll see if we can't inform and educate you and all that good stuff and just entertain you as we get to the week. I mean, come on, honestly. You've already declared it a weekend in your head anyway, right? If you're sitting at your desk listening on your earbuds, you probably got a little something in that coffee, don't you? I don't. I'm drinking a Celsius. I don't like coffee, but I don't drink it. But I do chug these Celsiuses like they're going out of style. Good Lord, Tony Katz and I. I've known Tony, what year is it? It's got to be since the Andrew Breitbart days. So probably going on 15 years. My favorite Tony memory is probably about 13 years ago. We're at a CPAC together. We weren't there together yet. I'm outside. I used to be a smoker. And I see Tony walking down the road, and he's carrying a... He's not carrying. He's dragging one of those... He looks like he's got his luggage with him, but it's not full-blown luggage. Well, Tony's a light packer. It's like one of those... laptop bags on wheels, you know how those go. And he's walking, and I'm sitting outside having a smoke outside this party. And he comes around and he sits down at the table with me, and we're talking, catching up. And I thought, well, Tony he must have just got here, right? Very light packer, and it was cold, so he's wearing jackets. Maybe he had a couple jackets on, whatever. I'm not judging. I'm certainly nobody to judge anybody's fashion sense. And he digs into his bag, he unzips his thing, and I thought, what are you gonna change clothes right here? No, it was basically a rolling humidor. That's what Tony's walking around with a freaking humidor in his bag, and I'm like, holy cow. And he gives me a cigar, and I'm like, all right, give me the smallest one you got, because I've quit smoking. I quit smoking in 2015, cold turkey. We used vape. I guess that's kind of cheating, but whatever. I quit that, too. So I recommend it. That's a good down step. But Tony gives me a cigar, and I said, well, give me a small one. And he had everything. I mean, I've seen cigar stores with... I'm surprised he didn't have, like, a cigar store Indian in his bag, too. But he gives me the smallest one. I said, because it was a good cigar. But when I was a smoker, I meant it, right? So I would have an occasional cigar, even good Cuban ones. And Tony did not... At least didn't offer me a Cuban. In there, he probably didn't even know what he had in there. He had so much stuff in Ziploc bags and, like, humidifying things and everything. It was a whole setup. And I would smoke a cigar, and I'd put it out, and then I'd have a cigarette. And then I'd go back to the cigar. That's how committed I was to smoking cigarettes, and I don't recommend doing that. So that's why I was like, I don't want a big cigar. Because I can't enjoy it. Because I can't inhale it. I'm an addict. But it was a delicious tasting cigar. Tony didn't mess around then. Doesn't mess around now. So thanks to him for having me fill in with it. We got a lot of stuff to get to. This is one of those weeks where you're just like, is this the return of The Walking Dead? What in the hell is going on? Christine Blase Ford. I know that's not how you pronounce her name. But that's how I pronounce her name, because that's about as much respect as I believe she deserves. But she comes back from the dead. It's the worst book launch ever. If you think about it, her it's One Way Back book. And the cover of the book is a picture of the ocean. And you're just like, wow. Who are the did they put, like, entry-level people, the new guy in the mailroom? Go ahead and design the cover there, Ted. You're on your own. They don't have a lot of faith in her. But they threw money at her because the left always takes care of their own. It's one thing that the left has over the right is they absolutely positively have a soft landing golden parachute waiting for everybody. Well, almost everybody. There was no soft landing. It's Christine Blase Ford was too valuable, too high profile, too educated to just discard. They will discard people. somewhere out there, probably still suffering whiplash, wondering what in the hell happened, is Cindy Sheehan. Remember her? Remember Cindy Sheehan? She was like the co-host of Hardball with Chris Matthews for a while. She was on everything. She was caught in his gravitational pull. She couldn't break free. There was a risk she was going to burn up in his atmosphere. She was all over Meet the Press, the Sunday, everything. She was living in a ditch in Crawford, Texas, going, I want to meet with George Bush. And the Code Pink people were all there with her. There's Medea Benjamin had handcuffed herself to her, and they were anti-war, and George W. Bush needs to meet with her. Then Barack Obama wins the election in 2008, and everybody just goes and treats it like it's shift change at the blackjack tables in Vegas, where they clap their hands, put them up, say, nothing up my sleeves, I'm out of here, see you guys later, walk way backwards, and Cindy Sheehan sitting there going, wait a second, I thought you cared about me and my son, and they kind of chuckled as they walked off in the horizon. Everybody at MSNBC collectively took out their Blackberries at the time, looked up Cindy Sheehan, deleted that contact, no longer useful. And the anti-war movement weirdly just all kind of said, meh. The war still went on, but the anti-war movement said, meh, we'll protest for something. What else you got? Give us something else. Find us an outrage. Well, there's war that you didn't like 20 minutes ago. Nah, it's something else. Give us something. I could have sworn you were against war. Meh, whatever. It's weird how that works. The situational outrage, the situational ethics. If you have situational ethics, pro tip, you don't have ethics. Am I allowed to say that? Probably not, but I don't care. But yeah, Christine Blasey Ford comes back, and even the ladies at The View are like, it's been 6 years. Nobody cares. Her book is in the 600s on Amazon. They're trying to resuscitate it. They're doing it, but how do you? It's a memoir. It's a memoir? It's a memoir of somebody. It's like reading Joe Biden's memoir if he didn't have a ghostwriter and nobody did any research. And it was literally just him locked in a room for 6 weeks to write a book. Like, that's it. You do it. You got the internet and that's it. And it would all be about how his son died taking Hamburger Hill in Iraq. How he was a leader in the civil rights movement, almost got shot when James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King, and how he single-handedly caused the Soviet Union to collapse. And he's sorry about that. That would be Joe Biden's biography. Because he can't remember. He lies. You got to remember. Thing about Joe Biden is, yes, he's suffering from dementia. So I'm not trying to make fun of somebody from suffering from dementia. But you got to remember, he's been stupid his whole life. He's only been suffering from dementia for like the last 3 or 4 years in any discernible way. He's been stupid his whole life. So when you look at what Joe Biden does or says or whatever, you've got to sit there and calculate which way to the scales tip. Is this because he's stupid or is this because he's senile? And then you make fun of it either way because he deserves it. He's a bad person. But they brought back Christine Blasey Ford. And how do you, just like Joe Biden, how do you get a memoir from somebody who can't remember anything? It's the most traumatic experience of my life. I'll never forget it. What year did it happen? That I don't know. Where did it happen? Not really sure about that. You got anybody on the planet Earth who would back up your story? Well, my friend Leland Kaiser. All right, hey, Leland Kaiser. No recollection of this. None. Huh. Anybody else? Nope, not really. You don't remember anything. See, if I'm at a party, and I've gone to many parties, and I used to do what's called the Irish goodbye. I didn't do it all the time. You overuse anything, and it becomes your gimmick, your shtick. But if you use it sparingly, you use it judiciously, it becomes an effective tool. The Irish goodbye, for those of you not of the potato eater background, such as myself, is when you just leave, right? You got your friends there, you got a whole bunch of people at the party, and you just kind of go, I'm going home, or I'm going to the bar, or I'm doing this, whatever. You just go. You go hunt down, spend 20 minutes hunting down everybody, letting them know you're leaving, or you just leave. Now, you don't do it if you're everybody's ride, but if you drove yourself, you can leave whenever the hell you want. You don't owe anybody an explanation, and maybe the next day they go, dude, what happened to you last night? I just left, or I went to the bar, or I got a call, or whatever. She apparently did the Irish goodbye, but screaming, if her story is to be told, running down the stairs, horrified that Brett Kavanaugh was either going to rape her or murder her. Her words. And her friend that she allegedly went to the party with, who has no recollection of these events or them two being ever anywhere near each other, said, no, I didn't remember that. But if you were there with, if you're two 16-year-olds, one of you's the ride. One of you, if you're there at a party with eight people and you're only friends with one of them and your friend disappears, you might go to your friend the next day at school or the next time you're at school, the next time you see them, go, hey, what the hell happened to you? We're at this party. There's a bunch of murderous would-be rapists right there with bloodlust in their hearts. And you just leave and you don't tell me anything. No discussion would be, because you'd remember that. You would remember that. She couldn't even remember how she got home that night. And so how do you fill 300 pages in a book with not really sure? I don't remember. Something happened. She's very clear about the details. He kissed her against her will and then started choking her for some weird reason. The only time, by the way, in his whole life that he's ever displayed this alleged activity, which in, to my mind, like Hunter Biden, we're supposed to believe that he started smoking crack at age 40. Up until then, boy, he was a church-going, God-fearing man. But sometime around 40, he's like, you know what? I'm having a midlife crisis. I don't want to go to my grave, never having smoked a lot of crack and fooled around with a bunch of hookers. So I'm going off the rails. Never, because we're told that Hunter freaked out over the death of his brother. And no doubt that's going to be traumatic. That's why he turned to drugs, they say, except for the fact that 2 years before his brother died, he was kicked out of the Marines or the Navy for testing positive on multiple occasions for cocaine. I mean, but other than that, some people apparently have time machines. It's okay. It's okay. And Christine Blasey Ford has no memory of any of these things, and she's writing a book about it, and Hunter Biden is a total straight shooter and a degenerate. And Brett Kavanaugh is a would-be... Remember, since we're going to get to Stormy Daniels in a second, that brings me to Michael Avenatti. Remember during the Christine Blasey Ford thing, Michael Avenatti comes out with... I can't remember her name, and her name doesn't matter. She was a redheaded woman who said that, well, I back up Christine Blasey Ford. The only person to back up Christine Blasey Ford's story was somebody who admittedly wasn't there, but claimed that she had attended multiple gang rape parties where Brett Kavanaugh drugged women and they all, a whole bunch of guys gang raped them. It's true. You might not remember this because it was so absurd, but it was true. And Michael Avenatti brought this through the lady to the forefront and she got the serious treatment by the media and everything. And nobody once said, you attended five of these parties, right? This would be my first question. And this is why I would never be a good journalist. I'd hear her out and go, okay, yeah. So you attended five of these parties, these gang rape parties where people were drugged and gang raped. Why? One wasn't enough? Was the music that good? Was the punch that tasty? Was the crowd that, like, what do you go, hey, that's a horrible, if there was a random murder party, just randomly murdered, we're going to be about 100 people there. It's going to be a great time. There's a pool. There's kegs. There's everything. But somewhere throughout the night, somebody's going to come through and randomly murder three people. Huh. You want to show up? No. I might accidentally show up to the first one. But as soon as I see Jason Voorhees walking through with the machete, taking out three people, I'm leaving. And then the next time they go, hey, they're having another random murder party. Like, I didn't know you were serious about that. I am not going back there. I don't care. The cake was delicious. They had steak. I don't care what they have. I'm not going back. If there is a gang rape party being run, I think most people, men and women, could unknowingly attend one. One. But five, you really got to sit there and go, this person may be not the most stable person in the world. Right? Might not be all that believable. Well, these are the people that make up most of the left's case against people on the right. If you look at it, the Brett Kavanaugh people, they're crazy. The View ladies are like, oh, so Christine Blasey Ford, you got really nasty emails from you. Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's terrible. And they were threatening to you. And that's bad. Nobody should threaten anybody. They never once mentioned the fact that the rhetoric of the left, them included, inspired a guy to travel all the way across the country to murder Brett Kavanaugh and his family. Right? Remember the guy that was... You don't remember it because the media just said, yeah, somebody came out, he was threatening the Supreme Court justice. Caught outside the house. Don't worry, security got him. Moving on. That would be a nonstop story if it was outside of Darth Vader Ginsburg's house. But it was a five-minute story, just like... what's his face? Oh, God. The guy who shot up the softball field. I can't remember his name, but it's right on the tip of my tongue. But he, James Hodgkinson, there it is. He, if he were a Republican, if he were a conservative in any way, shape, or form, you'd still be hearing about it to this day. Rachel Maddow would do a monologue a month, and she only works 4 days a month, about how Republicans are trying to inspire the next James Hodgkinson. Except James Hodgkinson was a fan of hers. And inspired by her rhetoric of Republican health care plans going to cost 10,000 lives a year. And so they moved off of the attempted murder of Steve Scalise before Steve Scalise was taken off of life support. Let that sink in. Anyway, I'm going long right here. You're listening to Tony Katz today. We'll be right back. Nobody should be allowed to play this music. Honestly, this is Rush Limbaugh. I was the last new fill-in host for Rush Limbaugh before he passed, and I'm friends with David and Bo and a couple other guys whose name is Coco Jr. But, yeah, you shouldn't be listening to that. Like, I just want to hear that. You can't even hear that song and go, oh, right, the Pretenders. No, give me all the other Pretenders songs. I don't want to hear that song because it just reminds me of what we lost. And how we could use him right now. Holy Frank Tanana, could we use him right now. So anyway, coming up on the show, we don't have a lot of time to get into it right now before news, before you get edumacated about the happenings at this particular moment. It's not just Christine Blasey for The Walking Dead back. It's Stormy Daniels. And even the ladies at The View are kind of going, why are we having this person on? And it's because she's useful again. You often sit there and you go, okay, what happens to useful? The left loves useful idiots. They've got a lot of them. And Cindy Sheehan was one of them. But once you lose the useful part, what are you left with? You can do that math. And so they just kind of discard people. They discard. I thought they were done with Stormy Daniels. Now Stormy Daniels is useful again. And I don't think she's helping the cause. I don't think she's helping. She was a little bit weird on The View yesterday. A little bit unhelpful to the point that even Whoopi, if you're getting Whoopi to turn towards the camera and towards the producers going, what are we doing? Why? And she's getting $8 million a year to do this stuff. So if you're making $8 million a year, I'd interview a statue. Like, all right, well, there you go. Hey, statue. Kind of quiet today. You're a little stoic. You're a little cold. But even Whoopi's looking for help. Like, what are we doing? What is going on? We also have the idea of plantation capitalism. It's a new thing. Never heard the phrase before. A Senate candidate in Maryland utters a racial slur. He's a member of the House. Utters an unambiguous racial slur in a congressional hearing yesterday. And it's barely a story. Macaca, they cut down forests to print newspapers to run stories about macaca this, macaca that. George Allen said macaca is a word. Like, half the stories were about what the word is, how it's pronounced, and why it's offensive. Now, if you have to explain to somebody why something is supposed to be offensive and nobody's offended by it, you're making it up. But they were bound and determined to get George Allen, and they got him. So, I mean, what do I know? But a sitting member of Congress, a very wealthy one, who's running for Senate from Maryland, says just an unambiguous racial slur casually. And he's like 68 years old. And he goes, gee, I didn't even know that was a racial slur. Like, really? Where did you live your whole life that you didn't know this was a racial slur, dude? So we've got that audio coming up as well. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful day. And we're going to have some fun till we get to 3 o'clock. Stick around. You're listening to Tony Katz today. Good and the Destroyers. I was just talking to the producers. I'm not a big fan of music, but I do know a lot about music, and I've worked in record stores and have been to a lot of concerts because I had a good friend in high school who ended up working, being a rep for Warner Brothers. And so, like, if you came around, if you toured in the 90s, I got to see you for free and probably stole some of your beer because we had backstage passes. I didn't appreciate it as much as I should have. I mean, not the beer. The beer I definitely appreciated. But the experience, yeah, I probably didn't experience or didn't appreciate it as much as possible. May or may not have done something that is only now becoming decriminalized or legal in a lot of states for recreational use with Weezer, for example, on their first tour at a festival in Pontiac, Michigan, a place called the Phoenix Center. Yeah, good times, I think. And again, I don't know. Maybe I'm just like Joe Biden and Christine Blasey Ford. I can't remember. It's weird. It's the perfect defense for anything. This happened. Well, give us more details. I can't remember. Okay. Then you get called to the stand or have to talk to a special prosecutor or whatever. And you're like, I can't remember. Who knows? It just escapes me. It's weird how that works out. It's the key to riches and staying out of prison on the left is an inability to recall intimate details from your own life. But then the few sparse details that you are able to recall, it's just like it happened yesterday. Why, that's why I have to have a barn door put in the front of every house I'm ever in. If I go and visit a neighbor's house, they have to put in a second front door, a third side door, and a skylight in order for me to feel safe. And oh, by the way, I'm afraid to fly. Not really, though. All the lies that these people told us, it worked. It worked. It only could work because we had an uncritical media. And that was it. It could only work because we had an uncritical media. It does no challenge whatsoever. You watch that White House press briefing and you think, is this for the official team newsletter? Like, what kind of questions are these? Sports journalism, entertainment journalism offers tougher questions to the subjects, and they're all on the dole. Like, there's a reason you see, we had a movie, we're going to sit down with all the entertainment press in Hawaii. And you sit there and you think, why? Well, it's because if you fly these people who, you know, sit in their underpants all day typing on a computer in their basement to Hawaii, a free trip to Hawaii to interview Brad Pitt for 5 minutes, what do you think the odds of these people going, boy, the movie sucked, are? Because the next trip is going to be Hawaii again or Cancun or someplace where they want to go. So they go, oh, that's a great movie. I absolutely loved it. It was wonderful. And you get softball questions. Somehow the political press has become that without the junkets. And it's because progressives are progressives first and foremost, and anything else a distant second. Anything else a long distant second. And so they are down with the cause. And thou shalt not question anything. Corinne Jean-Pierre is lying, but that's part of the game. And if you convince yourself that whatever it is Democrats do, Republicans are doing worse, then you'll let your team get away with it. The Houston Astros cheated and won the World Series. Banging on garbage can. Here comes a breaking ball. They cheated. There are fans of the Houston Astros who don't care. Who don't care. Because it was their team. Now, if the team that they beat had done the same thing and won, it would be the biggest outrage. Though the best way to put it is I grew up a Detroit Red Wings fan in Detroit. I hated somebody like Chris Chelios. God, I hated Chris Chelios when he played on the Chicago Blackhawks. He's a great defenseman, one of the all-time best. God, he was annoying. Same with Dominic Hasek when he was goalie for the Buffalo Sabres, I think it was. Whatever he was going with. I just hated him. It's like, he's too good. The people I hate. Then they became Red Wings. Chris Chelios went from a dirty player, cheap shot artist, to my dirty player, my cheap shot artist. If you view politics that way, then you look at Democrats and you go, well, of course they're a little bit full of it. Sure, they're lying, but they're lying for a good cause. It's a noble lie. It's okay. They're elevating people who... there's no way that woman that Michael Avenatti brought forward. There's no way that story happened. There's just no way that story happened. Yet they put it out there unquestioningly, to the point that Brian Stelter, when he was still at CNN, is sitting there, Uncle Fester himself, drooling over him. You could be president. You could be president of the United States, Michael Avenatti. How'd that work out again? I forget. It's weird how Michael Avenatti barely mentioned anymore. But the woman who brought Michael Avenatti to the fore, I guess maybe we should be thankful to Stormy Daniels, not just for the hours of riveting entertainment that her professional career has brought, and countless, I don't know, soap and scrub brushes and silkwood showers that she has inspired, but the fact that she brought forth Michael Avenatti into the public arena. And then he ripped her off, screwed her over. Now he's in prison because he also ripped off a whole bunch of his other clients. Probably do a little bit of background check on your lawyers before you hire them. But anyway, Stormy is out now, not because she's done anything, not because she's, I guess she's got some sort of reality show maybe going, which I don't know. If you're a porn star and somebody's following you around with a camera, is that really any different than any other day of the week? But the hush money trial, as they call it. They always say, it's the hush money trial. I mean, because it sounds really nefarious. And rather than misappropriation of campaign funds, is what it really, what they're accusing Trump of. But I think a pretty good case could be made that this was a legitimate campaign expense. But that's beside the point. It's a hush money trial. Now, it's weird, because if it's a hush money trial, and it really, it's not just weird if it's a hush money trial. The reason hush money was paid was because at some point Stephanie Clifford, aka Stormy Daniels, alleged, whether she did or not, I don't know. I'm not voting for Pope. I don't care. She said she had sex with Donald Trump. And at some point, somebody came up with the idea of, I sure would not talk about this to anybody if I had a bunch of money in my hand. That bunch of money manifested itself in the form of $150,000, and a non-disclosure agreement was signed. And then immediately somebody started disclosing. I don't think it's likely that the person who put the $150,000 in the person's hand would start disclosing. I think it's more likely the hand with the $150,000 would start disclosing. That's just me. That's a logical thought. But to my mind, that sure as hell seems an awful lot like blackmail or extortion. You can choose which entry in the thesaurus you prefer under those circumstances, but it sure as hell sounds like blackmail or extortion to me, which is a crime. Paying blackmail is not a crime. Little known fact, it is not a crime. So this is not a crime that that Donald Trump paid blackmail. Because that's not a crime. The crime would be the person blackmailing them, who weirdly would be Stormy Daniels, who is expected to be a witness for the prosecution. Not sure how you square that circle, how you make sense of that, but in being a liberal in New York City and Manhattan, you don't really have to worry about making logical sense. You just accuse a Republican, you accuse Donald Trump, you sit back, you pretend to put on a case, you wait 20 minutes, and the jury comes back and says, guilty. Yeah, that's how it works. But realistically, if there's a criminal here, it would be the person who would have been doing the extorting. Instead, they're saying Donald Trump used campaign funds to pay off Stormy. He used campaign funds. Misappropriation of campaign funds. Well, I'd say that's a legitimate campaign. She's, whether he had relations with her or not is irrelevant. If there's something that could damage the campaign, and that's really what it would be, is possibly, although I don't think it would have, then it would be a legitimate campaign expense to do it. Consider, how can I say that? How can you say that, Derek? Well, there's a very simple way. Look at what else is actually categorized as legitimate campaign funds. Pretty much every meal that is not paid for by somebody else that a member of Congress has to have. They have find a way. We'll talk 5 seconds about the campaign. There we go. We'll charge that. The vast majority of congressional districts are 60% or higher gerrymandered to protect the incumbent. So you get somebody like Maxine Waters, raises a ton of money. When Democrats were in charge of the House, she was chair of the House Banking Committee. And if you're playing the home game, the banking industry has a lot of money. They throw a lot of money around. So they were throwing a lot of money at Maxine Waters. I think the smallest amount of the popular vote, of the vote in Maxine Waters' career that she was reelected with, was like 72%. She got 72%, and the closest challenge, nail biter, wasn't sure I was going to get reelected there. 72%. She lives in Beverly Hills. She represents like Watts or South Central, whatever it is. She doesn't live in her district, but she's safe. She's safe. If you keep reelecting somebody that dumb, there's no way that everybody's just going to collectively go, what are we doing? So she's safe. But she still raises a ton of money. She still, her campaign still spends a ton of money. Why? Because, well, she has to go and campaign. She has to travel around the district, travel around the state, travel around the country, travel around the world to fundraise for her campaign. It's perfectly legal. They're the people who set the rules. She also pays her daughter more than $100,000 a year to manage a campaign newsletter that is physically mailed to people. Now, if you're getting 70% of the vote out of the gate, you might sit there and think that seems a little bit weird, but okay. It's a legitimate campaign expenditure. You are allowed through your campaign to contact your constituents. But if she were to take that $100,000, you'll see this all, Ilhan Omar hired her husband and his consulting firm to work on her campaign. She's another person who won like 75% of the vote. Paid her husband, her third husband, by the way, but this, only the second one that isn't a direct family blood relative. So, you know, baby steps. Paid her husband like $1.2 million for consulting for her campaign and her reelection bid that was already a foregone conclusion. Because if Ilhan Omar had taken $1.2 million of her campaign war chest and stuck it in her own pocket, that would be illegal. But she could take that $1.2 million, give it to her husband's firm. He could put it then in their joint bank account, and it's illegal. It's perfectly legal. Hey, congratulations. You've just, it's not even money laundering. At least in money laundering, the amount is reduced. You can hope for maybe 60 cents on the dollar. In this, you get straight up the money because the people who benefit are also the people who make the rules. They're also the people who would have to change the rules to get rid of the corruption. That's how you can end up with Eric Swalwell going to a fundraiser and spending a week in Paris. You go, what the hell? How's he get a free trip to Paris? He gets a free trip to Paris because he's over there for his campaign. They set up a couple of fundraisers for expats living in Europe in Paris, right? There are lots of Americans living overseas. There are Republicans and Democrats. They're wealthy, generally, if you're living in a place like Paris. So they can attend a $1,000 a head fundraiser, even for a moron like Eric Swalwell. So you go, I'll raise $20,000. So you go over there, you get 20 people in a room, $20,000, and I'll spend $5,000 for a week in Paris, because you got to go there, you got to have enough time to acclimate to the time change. While you're there, you got to eat, so the meals are covered. You got to have staff or family with you. It just wouldn't be right to go over there. And you can make family staff of the campaign. And suddenly you get something that is part of a showcase showdown and the price is right. But you get it paid for by the campaign. And then you come home and you win with 68% of the vote. You go, why did you really need that? No, you didn't really need that money. But you had to go and have the fundraiser or raisers, campaign events, in order to justify legally, not morally, not ethically, but legally, the expense being covered by the campaign. Again, they set the rules. It's a hell of a racket. So you look at all of these people and all of these things, and you go, that's legal. But $150,000 to somebody to stop them from attacking you honestly or with a lie, and seems pretty pedestrian, doesn't it? There are people who make a fortune off of these things, but Donald Trump isn't part of the game. He isn't a part of that team. So they're rolling out Stormy. And, well, not shockingly, it turns out that somebody who made their name in pornography might not be somebody you would want on your trivia team, right? If you're going in a group IQ game or the Trivia Olympics, or even if you're betting on Celebrity Jeopardy, you probably wouldn't put a lot of money on Stormy Daniels. But the left did. Thankfully for them, or luckily for them, you're not really having to clear a particularly high bar when it comes to impressing the ladies on The View. Even with that in mind, Stormy wasn't able to impress the ladies on The View. Whoopi Goldberg looks like it's a hostage video. She's staring over at the producer going, what the hell are we doing? We got a couple of clips that we'll get to on the other side of the break, but we've got to get to said break because that's just how radio works. You're listening. I'm Derek Hunter, sitting in for Tony Katz on Tony Katz Today. Getting trippy. Been dazed and confused for so long. Oh, poor Joe. It's not true. It always makes me think of Joe. Anyway, speaking of dazed and confused, we've got some Stormy Daniels. Let's just go right to cut two. Stormy here. She compared Trump supporters to suicide bombers. All right, okay. And then she goes on to pull this garbage that you always hear these leftists do. I'm like, oh, don't tell my truth. It's my opportunity to tell me. Don't have the time? All right, we'll hold it till the other side. But nobody's stopping these people from talking. Good Lord, I wish somebody would stop them from talking. But they don't. They won't. Like, well, I'm finally going to get a chance to tell my truth. How about you give us a break? Anyway, we are 1 hour down. Holy cow. Tony Katz Today is just flying by, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere because there might be a quiz.